22. A person would have to eat 3,400 rubber ducks. The rising dependency of the United States on oil imports from the Gulf of Guinea did not only result from Americans' unusually high per capita guzzling of gasoline and diesel. About a quarter of American oil imports were taken up for industrial uses. The manufacture of commercial chemicals from oil and natural gas feedstocks accounted for a large proportion of this industrial use. ExxonMobil Chemical, headquartered in Houston, made up the third of the corporation's major divisions, alongside upstream, oil and gas exploration and production, and downstream, refining and fuels marketing, the gasoline station companies. In 2007, the chemical division accounted for about 10% of ExxonMobil's record $40.6 billion in profits. Upstream dwarfed chemical, and the latter's executives often labored in the shadows of their oil brethren. Yet if ExxonMobil Chemical had been a standalone corporation that year, it would have been among the 50 most profitable companies in the United States. In many of its business lines, the division quietly held the first or second market position in the world. The early 21st century politics of global oil and gas production turned on security, nationalism, climate change, and taxation. The politics of the chemical industry were distinct. They drew ExxonMobil's management and lobbying teams directly into legislative and regulatory debates about how best to manage the risks to human health posed by the use of industrial, agricultural, and household chemicals. Ken Cohen, the public affairs chief, had forged his career as an attorney in ExxonMobil Chemical. The communications and political strategies he developed for the entire corporation after 2000 reflected, in part, the science-debating, my-study-versus-your-study culture of chemical regulation in Washington and Brussels, the headquarters of the European Union. Since the 1970s, ExxonMobil Chemical and its brethren in the industry's principal U.S. lobbying arm, the American Chemistry Council, had won more regulatory battles in America than in Europe. As with climate change, chemical industry lobbyists feared and fought the migration of European regulatory philosophies across the Atlantic. And after 2000, the regulatory issues that mattered most to ExxonMobil increasingly drew the corporation into a war of ideas about risk. Some scientists and scholars advocated a risk analysis model to evaluate the dangers of chemicals. This relied on mathematical calculations about the probability that a certain use of chemicals might hurt people. The chemical industry favored this approach because it effectively placed the burden of scientific proof on those who wanted to stop a chemical sale. Even where scientists might establish some risk to human health, that measure of risk could then be weighed against the benefits of the product. ExxonMobil and other opponents of greenhouse gas regulation had used risk analysis frameworks to strengthen their arguments in opposition to the Kyoto Protocol's goals. The corporation's allies and think tanks and academia demanded that environmentalists prove cause and effect in climate change science beyond a reasonable doubt. And even then, after 2006, when ExxonMobil finally conceded that human activity might be contributing to global warming, the corporation still resisted specific restrictions on carbon use on the grounds that the economic costs outweighed the environmental benefits. This was the burden of proof demanded by the most conservative advocates of risk analysis. First, prove the harm. Then, if the harm is established, prove that the cost-benefit equation of proposed regulation is well-balanced. ExxonMobil applied the same lobbying strategy to proposed regulation of its manufactured chemicals. After 2000, a new idea arrived from Europe to challenge the assumptions of the risk analysis school, the precautionary principle. The idea can be traced to West German environmental regulations enacted during the 1970s on the basis of Vorsorge, or precaution. Advocates of the precautionary principle argued that in cases where damage to society or people might be severe and irreversible, preventive action should be taken up front, even if there were important uncertainties about the relevant science. Although it sounds like common sense, in fact, the precautionary principle poses a radical challenge to business as usual in a modern, capitalist, technological civilization, author Michael Pollan has noted. Under the principles of risk analysis, industry lobbyists could often overcome objections by environmentalists or food safety advocates. Until someone finds the smoking gun, Pollan continued. The precautionary principle reversed the burden of proof and sought to address the problem of traditional regulation, namely, that long before the science does come in, the harm has already been done. And once a technology has entered the marketplace, the burden of bringing in that science typically falls on the public rather than on the companies selling it.